Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky with Savitsky Talks. And today we have Lynn Goldberg from Toronto, Canada, who has a interesting profession, but a more interesting sideline that he does. And Lynn, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Glad to be with you.
Well, that's great. You know, Lynn, that in the fall edition of the Jewish Action, there's going to be an article written about you. It's called For the Love of Honey by Noreen Giletz. And I read it. It was really, really fascinating. So now I don't know how to pronounce it. What is it called when you are a bee? What is it exactly? How does it work?
Besides being a mshigana, it's called an apiarist.
Apiarist. So you are an apiarist. Okay,
yeah.
Which you do part-time, and you talk about how you run a successful sting operation, which is great. So tell us, how did you get involved in this entire process? It sounds fascinating, by the way.
It is fascinating. It's a recurring miracle every time I go in the springtime to see if my bees survive the winter. But basically, it started by just walking past a hive that a friend of mine had started. And the whole concept seemed so fascinating that I went to Guelph University at night school for 6 weeks to learn how to become an amateur beekeeper.
So you had to go to school to learn this, okay.
Uh-huh. Yes, I tell people I got my BCom.
Uh-huh. How long was school for?
It was one night a week for 6 weeks.
One night a week for 6 weeks. Very interesting. And it seems that you say in the article, you talk about the fact that you spend about 2 hours a week from May through October. First of all, where are these bees housed? Not near your house, I presume.
No, municipal bylaws preclude that from happening. Fortunately, I have a client with a large farm, and he allows me, in exchange for 12 jars of honey, to keep my bees on his property.
Ah, so you keep the bees on the property. And so what happens between, I guess, November and April in the life of the bee?
Well, most of them die off because of the extreme cold. And what the rest do is hover around the queen and keep her warm. They have kind of rotating circles of worker bees that move in and out to feed the queen from the honey that I leave behind and keep her warm so that when the spring comes next year, she'll be productive again and start laying eggs.
How long is the lifespan of the queen bee?
All being well, queen bee will live up to 3 years. Which
three
is the longest lifespan in the colony. The worker bees in the honey flow will only last about 6 weeks, and they virtually die from overwork. But during the wintertime, their whole metabolism slows down, so they most of them, once they accommodate into the temperature and everything, will survive over the winter.
So if they were in a warmer climate in the winter, more would survive?
Yes. Like Israel, I mean... Uh-huh. They're blessed with nice weather and not minus 20 like we have here from time to time.
Uh-huh. So can't you house them indoors at all as opposed to being outside?
It is possible to have the box inside with an entryway going outside. So should they need to have a cleansing flight, they can fly out and come back in. That would probably ensure their survival a little bit more. But then if it's too active and you don't have food to feed them because there's no flowers or anything, it may be self-defeating.
Uh-huh. Okay. So you said there are three bees. There's the queen bee, which is only, there's only one queen bee?
Only one queen bee per colony.
Okay.
And interestingly enough, they emit something called a pheromone to which the worker bees are attracted. So the bees from colony A will not go to colony B because the queen in colony B has a different pheromone than the one they've learned to adopt to.
And you said there were three kinds. There's the worker bee, there's the queen bee, and there was another bee?
The drone bee.
What's that? Ah, okay. Now, you say colony. How many colonies do you have?
I have 5 colonies this year.
5. And how far away is each colony from the other?
Oh, they're side by side.
Oh, they're side by side, but yet they don't go from one. They keep their own dollar
on them,
so to speak.
Right.
Ah, interesting, interesting, very interesting. So I read that you had nearly 250,000 bees that you have on the property. Is that correct?
Yeah, because each colony could have up to like 50,000 bees in it. Okay. And you have five of them, so there's your 250,000.
Wow, unbelievable. And from all of this, you get approximately 5 gallons of honey.
Well, from three colonies, I got five. Yeah. So this year, should maybe get 7 or 8.
7 or 8 gallons. And when they sell them in the store, what do they normally sell? These little jars or what, 16 ounces or
Well, that's where
like
the
that.
Title comes from, for the love of honey, because I don't sell it. There's no money in honey.
No, not you. I'm talking about in the stores. I'm trying to think about when you go into the stores.
Oh, I guess a jar of pure honey would probably go $4 or $5, you know, for 500 grams, I guess.
Right.
Like a...
Uh-huh. And then you gather them up every year, I understand, on Rosh Hashanah, Erev Rosh Hashanah, and you give them out to different people in the community, correct?
Yeah. Friends, rabbis. I do... talks at the different Lubavitch schools in the community, teaching them about bees. I leave the birds up to the teachers, but I do the bee part.
Oh, so and, you do the birds and the bees. You do the birds part, and the teachers hopefully do the bee part.
Or the other way around.
That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, and they're very interested, and it's very their fascination is.
Do you bring any bees with you when you go? Or not?
I do. I built a special container that they can see through and see a frame of bees actively at work, and that. I bring my bee suit, I dress them all up, and they pretend to be little beekeepers, and the teachers usually have cameras, and they take pictures of the kids. Mm-hmm. So it's a Freilich event.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And I'm reading about how you had, like, volunteers who help with the process of spinning the honey, right? And what does that mean? What's the process? How does it work?
Well,
I'm sure most people
frame,
don't even have any idea.
Each frame of honey. Well, it starts with the box, okay? The box was invented or discovered in, I guess, the mid-1800s by a guy named Langstroth. It's called the Langstroth Hive, and he discovered a concept called bee space, which is, to this day, the standard by which beehives are made. Bee space is the distance between two frames of honey. If the bee space is too big, the bees will seek to combine them and join them together. If it's too small, they can't walk on it. So bee space is just the precise distance that bees can deposit honey and from which we extract it. So every frame is full of honey, and it's the shape that we're normally used to seeing. And each cell is capped with wax. So the honey goes in, then they seal it with wax. Before we extract the honey, we have to uncap it, take the wax off the top. So I have a hot knife that's used totally just for uncapping the frames in the beehive. Then the honey is still stuck inside the frame, so you have to put it in kind of a mini centrifuge and get somebody to crank it, turn it around, crank it backwards, forwards, inside, outside, and the honey spins out to the sides of this vessel, drains down to the bottom. And we filter it 2 or 3 times, stainless steel filter.
Now, this is the same process the big companies that sell honey commercially. Do they follow the same process you do, or is there a more commercial process?
It's basically the same process, but they have equipment to do it. So they have uncappers that are industrial, so it just slices right through it. Instead of me having to patiently move the knife down the hive, they'll have big machines that'll do that. And they also heat the honey to a high temperature so it flows faster through the pipes and makes it easier to filter. And they also combined honey from all different kinds of sources, so its taste is somewhat blended, whereas anybody who has a bee yard, it'll have the flavor of the blooms that are nearby. So if it's in the middle of a clover patch, it'll be clover honey, buckwheat, and so forth and so on. So that's how the flavor of the honey gets imparted, is by the crops that the bees pollinate and gather the nectar
and
from.
And
what do you have?
What do you have in your orchard?
Mixed wildflowers. So it's a whole bunch of different things, from goldenrod to clover to Queen Anne's lace and a whole bunch of other blooms that are in the farmer's field and nearby.
Uh-huh. And you talk about the your first lesson as a beekeeper. What happened?
Well, that was one thing I missed that class, I'm not sure, but in the old days, things have changed since then. When you went to the bee store, which we're fortunate to have one in Toronto, the bees would come in from Italy, you'd get a phone call and your visa in, and you'd have to drop what you're doing, go and get them because they're not going to store them for you. So you have these boxes just full of bees, and for some how you have to get them from that box into the hive that you've just built. So for me, I didn't know exactly how to handle it, so I just kind of turned it upside down, shook them out, and of course when you shake bees, they're not very happy. So you have to kind of evacuate the immediate territory so they don't come after you. But now it's completely different, so we don't have that aggravation anymore.
So what do you do now?
Now when you go buy bees, the fellow I buy them from, you buy four frames of brood and a queen bee. So you come with your box minus four frames. He puts the frames in there with the queen bee, and away you go. Mm-hmm. So it's much easier.
Well, but I guess the first time was an experience you'll never forget.
Oh, for sure.
Now, do you have, I know there are many people who have a fear of bees. You obviously do not, or didn't.
Well, I still have a healthy respect for them because depending on how aggressive they are, you can be intimidated by them flying around your veil, which would cause my first catastrophe is thinking one of them was inside the veil, not outside. But you got to learn to trust your equipment, make sure you put it on properly, and then you should have no worries. But many people are just are afraid. You know, many people say, oh, that's great, I'll have to come see your operation, and they never show up.
So you have a special outfit that you wear, correct?
Now I do. The first time it was made out of duct tape and mechanics overalls, so the combination would eventually lead to disaster, which it did. But now I have professional equipment, and it works very nicely.
Oh, wow. That's really, really fascinating. And you were saying that the thing is fascinating. I mean, we always talk about someone works like a bee, you know. I mean, you know, the bee is as busy as a bee. It's really true.
It really is true because a worker bee in the honey flow is just going 24 hours a day. You know, between when you look at all the activities that take place in the hive in virtual darkness, they look after the eggs that the queen has laid, make sure that they're sealed, and when they come out that the young bees are fed. They create an ingredient called propolis, which people eat, as a matter of fact, but they use it to seal everything together. So when you take a frame of honey out, you have to pry it out because it's been glued together with this propolis. So they feed the queen, look after the queen, repair, and even on a hot day, you can see several of them perched outside, looking out with their wings fluttering to create a small draft to keep the hive a little bit cooler. This, to me, is a miracle, recurring miracle, because
right,
you have
right.
50,000 bees working in complete darkness, and they don't get into fights. They all are loyal to the queen. All these nursery jobs and foraging jobs and looking for honey, looking for pollen and nectar, and the bee dance that you've heard about, this all takes place with no visible signs of a higher intellect. So to me, it's just an amazing process.
No, it really is. It's really incredible. I'm just curious about something about the costs, in case people are thinking about maybe this is an interesting hobby, which it certainly is. Is it expensive to do this?
It takes time and effort and money to buy the bees. A colony, a laying queen and four frames of brood is about $150. If they don't survive over the winter, you have to replace them. To build a box with the frames, you have to have at least three of them, and that's probably another $150. There's all kinds of other things that are required before you get into the business, like the outfit, the veil, and the garment. That's probably another $100. Then the smoker and the hive tool, the spinner, that's $500 just for that. So it's a bit of an expensive hobby, but fortunately, if you play it right, all these items can be reused year after year. There's another interesting thing, the queen excluder, which is something nobody sees, but I can tell you a little bit about that.
Okay, sure, please.
Because when you harvest the honey, you want to make sure there's no eggs or larvae or baby bees in it. So the way to do it is you have the queen on the first box at the bottom, and you put a queen excluder on top. So a queen excluder is like an oven grate. It's big enough for a worker bee to go back and forth, but because the queen is larger, she can't go through it. So that way, when you're harvesting honey, you know there's no brood in it.
Ah, very interesting. Wow.
Very interesting, yeah.
It's just amazing. It's amazing the works of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's just fascinating. Just fascinating.
The other thing, too, is the queen is not just the queen excluder, but the bee escape. Like when you go to the field to harvest, to take the box home to extract the honey, you have to make sure there's no bees in it. And the way that takes place is with a special device called a bee escape. It's like a one-way door. So bees have to go out every day. So when they go out from the hive that you, or the box you want to harvest honey from, they can't get back in. So you leave it there for a week, and by the time you come back, all the bees have left and they're not back in, so you're taking a hive full of honey, but not full of bees.
Hmm. And I understand that we actually are going to have a recipe in the magazine, your wife's special honey garlic chicken wings.
Yes.
That's great. So people get a chance to try it out. What a great time it is. I mean, especially, you know, as the Chagim come up and Rosh Hashanah comes up, it's a perfect gift to give somebody. And I think it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. And so I really appreciate you coming on the program to enlighten all of us about something probably I certainly didn't know anything about, and I'm sure many people didn't know much about. And hopefully people will be able to read the article For the Love of Honey. And thank you so much, Len, for spending some time with us and elucidating us on a fascinating, fascinating work of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, once again reinforcing, you know, our concept that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, and every little aspect of it is taken care of with precision. So thank you so much, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay. All right, then.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.